the tumult and the shouting dies, the captains and the kings depart. Still stands thine ancient sacrifice, an humble and a contrite heart. Lord God of hosts, be with us yet, lest we forget. The poet Rudyard Kipling wrote that for Queen Victoria's 60th Jubilee in 1897. He hadn't intended it for that, it was used for that, and it wasn't a very popular piece at the time, nor was he popular for having written it. It seemed to speak against the pomp and celebration of the day and of the British Empire. It spoke of the fleeting nature of political power and of empire itself in the light of the brevity of life and the sheer mystery of God, an unpopular piece. Be with us yet, lest we forget. Are we forgetting? I watched a bit of history yesterday on the wars. There's lots of it playing on the television this time of the year. And I watched 2 hours of programming on the German attacks on the Soviet Union. And it was a slaughter. 20 million Russians died in that war of liberation. And the Germans died. And 60 million people died in World War II. And then I watched an hour on the Battle of the Somme from World War I. The British and the British allies didn't have a chance. The Germans had prepared for years and dug into the hills along the battle line. And when the British fired off all their weapons and their artillery, thinking they had cleared the field and sent their men walking in order towards the line, they were cut down by machine gun fire all across the place. Tens of thousands of German troops remained alive, knew exactly when the charge was coming, and waited for them. It's easy to forget the cost which has been so lately borne. The pain recedes, or somehow the pain is discredited as if it really wasn't all that painful now, all the years down the road. And thoughts of conquest and glory reemerge, and we in our generations and the ones to come all over the world say to each other, this is our time. It isn't going to happen like it did in the past. We will do it better. There's no talk of the enormity of the graveyards through which people are walking today and the profound silence that meets them there, lest we forget. In the rise of the alt-right, the myth of national preeminence, the building of walls instead of goodwill, the rising mistrust of leaders and institutions that have been so hard won among us to prove their worth, our fear of kindness as somehow debilitating and making us vulnerable, a narrowing of concern, a trust in armaments alone, the desire to hit hard, no compassion, no negotiation, blitzkrieg, shock and awe. We feel we can outrun annihilation somehow, that we can lie our way into the truth somehow. There are layers of war here on Remembrance Day. There are the wars lost in the dust of history, battles between extinct empires. We see it in the scarlets and the swords in front of us today, a regiment who fought bravely on the plains of Abraham and changed the course of history in North America and were disbanded in 1761. We remember Vimy Ridge, the slaughter of the Royal Newfoundland Regiment. At the end of the battle, every officer had been killed, and only 250 of the soldiers reported for duty the next morning, over 5,000 slain. And Ypres, my great uncle, William Sinclair, was a member of the Gordon Highlanders. He was a piper, and he was killed in the first battle of Vimy Ridge. A few years ago, having traced his name, I went and stood on the walkway of the small house which my great-grandparents had lived in Inverness. And as I stood there, I realized that this is the very walk up which the postman would have come to deliver the news of William's death. I hadn't thought of him ever in my life until his name popped into my mind one day, and I went onto the internet and I searched him by name, and all his information came up, his street address, the place where he is buried, the day he was killed, and that day was the 90th anniversary to the day of his death. The war to end all wars didn't. It took away generations, it broke hearts, it ruined nations, and it brought misery that went on for decades and eons. And then fascism, the Battle of Britain, deportation and the mass murder of Jews, Coventry, Dresden, London, Berlin, D-Day, Juno Beach for the Canadians, Hong Kong, Malaysia, Tokyo, Hiroshima, Nagasaki. The two Koreas that only this week have stood down some of their troops on the demilitarized zone that existed between them for generations. And Vietnam, the war the government knew it could not win early, but kept sending troops and troops and troops to their death to save face. And Bosnia, the snipers, the mass graves, the genocide. Rwanda, the machetes. ISIS, the Taliban, the Yazidi refugees. Iraq, Afghanistan, Palestine, Israel, Yemen, and at home, PTSD, suicide, drug abuse, family violence, and social isolation and alienation. War is a memory. It is scar tissue, it is valor, it is courage, it's necessity, it's a waste, and it's a profound sacrifice. To fight is to risk losing something, and not to fight is to risk losing something. What a conundrum. We live in the midst of war, and that midst is so perverse we hardly notice the war anymore. Famine and pollution are wars on nature. And family status and social privilege and gender persecution are wars on culture, and illness and death are wars on anchorage and our sense of well-being. At a 78th Fraser's Regimental dinner the other evening, Lieutenant Colonel David Clark presented a toast called A Toast to the Fallen. It's a traditional toast at a regimental dinner. It is celebrated in silence and seated. And the toast was so deeply moving. I heard in it the shades of loss beyond the mortal life. When one soldier dies, others die at home and continue to die around that death. And I asked him to bring us that toast this morning, later in the service, just before the pastoral prayers. And I began to see that we must do whatever is necessary in order to survive in this life. And sometimes having to do things are very different from the things we thought we would do. The high road we're going to take all the time. The easy route from one way to another. Somehow there is no easy route. Sometimes standards need to be changed and new ways of looking at the world need to be developed. It calls for cunning and flexibility and unsettling choices. Beneath the high standards we set for ourselves, there are necessities that must be met. War brings them out. This sermon is called At the Bottom of the Bed, and it's a reference to the Ruth story, and it's a very strange text for a Remembrance Day, don't you think? It places this text against the parades and the bunting and the certainties of this day, and to do so is very informative. The biblical editors place the text of the book of Ruth, it's just a little four-page book, between the end of the Judges period in history, that is Ehud and Samson and Deborah and the others, and before the rise of the kings, Saul and David and Solomon and the others. In the time of the Judges, tribes fought with each other for grazing land and water and territorial domination and trade. And in the times of the kings, armies swarmed out in warring season for honor and conquest and booty and the ego of the monarch. And in the book of Ruth, the little book of Ruth, we're given a reality check. We see what war does to ordinary lives. Naomi is an older woman. She is a Jew, and times are tough in the homeland, and so she joins a caravan of others, and she walks towards what she feels will be a better life. She has the strength of her husband and her two sons, and their foreign wives, young women from Moab, the neighboring country, and off they go. But life turns sour on them, and in short order, her husband dies, and the two sons die, and the three women are left profoundly vulnerable in their culture, as they would be in this culture. No one wants them now. There is no family member to take up marriage with them. They are a drain on resources. They are vulnerable to the community. They are a sign of our weakness, you know, women, and their weakness, the men would say back then. Fortunes changed. The men died. One daughter went home at the request of her mother-in-law, but Ruth, the other daughter-in-law, stayed. Loyalty and commitment. You live, I live. You die, I die, said Ruth to Naomi. And then we pick up the story. Naomi risks a daring plan for their survival. And it's very different from the plan you might make when times are good. She says to her daughter-in-law, put on your perfume and your lipstick and your finest garb and go down to the tent of Boaz, the man who owns the field you've been gleaning in. And after he's had a few drinks and dinner, crawl into the bottom of his bed and lie there under the covers till he discovers you, and then do whatever he says. What a text in a time of hashtag me too, in a time of hashtag times up, in a time of missing indigenous and murdered women and girls, in a time of date rape, and a woman's fear of elevators and underground parking lots and all the rest. It was the same then in those days, the same in every generation. It seems to be the wrong text for a Remembrance Day, doesn't it? But the story says that Boaz, an older man, a widowed man, honored the girl. He honored the girl. He protected her, and they fell in love with each other, and he found a new sense of joy that he felt he would never find again. And in a while, she became pregnant and gave birth to a little boy. Hope for Naomi, hope for Boaz and a young family, hope for the future. And they named the little boy Obed. Names are profoundly significant in the Old Testament. Obed. It means worshiper, and it means servant. Worshiper and servant. And I thought of the two great laws in ancient Israel. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, worship, and your neighbor as yourself, servant. Obed is a model of the greatest law of Israel born into the midst. And Obed becomes the father of Jesse, whose name means God exists / prosperity. So there's a change of direction. Who becomes the father of David, the greatest king, the greatest messianic hope. So there, in the midst of the royal lineage, is the story that taking a chance, going a different route in times of trouble, trusting a better human nature, making yourself vulnerable to it, can change everything forever. To find the way through war to a meaningful life may involve a daring vulnerability. Had you thought that before? Are we past the point of being vulnerable to each other in society? At the bottom of the bed on Remembrance Day is the story of a woman wise in a time of loss, wise in her way of the world, and in so being, she led to the hope of millions in the world to come. Well, in the letter to the Hebrews, we meet a priest who's having trouble sleeping. Well, no wonder in a world like this, the big empires are oppressing, and the people at the top are calling all the shots, and the people at the bottom are grumbling, and there are disparities across the globe, and these are monumental, and the priest ruminates on these all night in the darkness of his room. Religion, he finds, is a spur line most days. These days, it's not a main line for people anymore. It's used as a weapon for some. It is an inner strength for others who cling close to the altar. Few talk about its riches. Most just keep silent about it and watch the world unfold and hope for the best. And in the midst of it, he is to be a priest somehow. And at the bottom of the bed are his priestly robes. He threw them there at the end of the day. The nightly news was more fear-mongering, more nightclub shootings, more sectarian hatred across the world, and he looked again at the robes at the bottom of the bed. How can he best honor these robes, he said to himself. These priestly robes, again and again, he posed the question. How about ceremony? Does that work if I just wear them ceremonially? I stand among the people in my robes. Is that going to tell them something, he thought? What about expressions of tradition? Perhaps that would help. What about graces said at public banquets? Everyone likes a lovely grace at a public banquet. What about prayers for victory shouted out loud at a football game? Everybody wants to win. And then the word came to him in the night. Sacrifice. It's about sacrifice. You become a sacrifice for something when you wear those robes. The robes of our common humanity, our serving robes, still lie at the bottom of the bed. How shall we wear them when we pick them up in the morning? The greatest among us have worn them as robes of sacrifice. Writing of this time of year in a sermon, Dr. Leonard Griffith, one of the great Canadian preachers of the past, recalls a story of a First World War padre. In the midst of the battlefield, when the battles were raging, he would stand with his horse watching the battle from the trenches. And then when the gunfire subsided, he would go out with his horse and walk through no man's land, checking the dead and the wounded. He would bless the dead with a requiem phrase, and then he would lift the wounded onto his horse and walk them slowly back to the familiar lines. He did this day after day in the face of the enemy, who could see him across the open field, in the face of the snipers. Everyone hung on to their sides, hung on bit down on their fingers as they watched this old padre crossing the field with his horse every night. Sure enough, the inevitable happened. Some sharpshooter down the range took aim at him, fired at him, killed him dead on the spot. He lay there beside the horse in no man's land, and a great cry went up from all down the familiar line. Give him heaven, they shouted in one voice. Give him heaven. We recognize the power of sacrifice in life. To wear the priestly robes is still to wear the robes of sacrifice. Well, if you look to the bottom of the bed in Mark's parable, you're going to find one little coin hidden among the sheets, a small, insignificant coin. Now, we can play lip service to goodness and to truth and to honor, and we do. We stand at attention, and nobly so, with our hearts in it, and we admire those who marched away to do their duty in their time. We hold them in awe. It is genuine affection. But it's easy to slip back into a false place and to throw money casually at helping institutions. It's easy to support the children and to support those who are less able to fend for themselves. If you do it out there, it will stop them from knocking on your door, the door of your house, to ask for even more. We display good hearts from a place of sufficiency and good fortune. People have always done that. But here in the story is a poor old woman, probably a veteran of many wars of which she knows. Disappointment and loss, for sure. The stigma of age and infirmity creeping up on her, for sure. She places a coin, every penny she had, at the bottom of the bed. Why did she do that? Perhaps she found a dependence on something beyond money. Wouldn't that be something? How freeing that would be in life to find a dependence on something beyond money. Perhaps she felt the need to help somebody else who had a greater need than her own. She left a coin, perhaps as a gesture of gratitude, for having a moment of respite, a bed to sleep in for the night at all, or perhaps as a small gratuity to someone she would never see who would come in drudgingly to repair the room for the next person. Here is a wise old woman trusting life beyond all the risk and the pain she knows. That gesture, the gesture of one small coin, may be more valuable in any war than a decorated general, more valuable than a decorated general. At the bottom of the bed is the indelible indentation of everyone who ever slept there, who took a chance on life, who wrestled with the choices between service and sacrifice as we wrestle with them, one who dared to risk all to give one tiny gift to an unknown recipient. That one has slept in that bed before we got there. And in our war and remembrance, these sacrificial darings and intangible elements play a greater role in the outcome of all the wars than we can ever imagine. It's not a shooting war. A shooting war, to me, is a failure. It's the last thing we would do to each other if we were truly sane. But this simpler battle, kindness, vulnerability, trusting someone when no one else is trusting anybody, these things can take us toward the finish line more readily than we know. The front line decides human fate and fortune for years. And today, in Remembrance Day, we remember the front line and its profound cost. But the bottom of the bed also influences the kind of life we're going to have in the future. Real peace may be found at the bottom of the bed. Who knows? When you go home, look at the bottom of the bed and consider again your place in the war in which we all fight.